Good morning and welcome to our program, Our American Heritage. I am your host, Arch Hunter, and it's our desire at American Heritage to explore in depth the American experience from its beginning to the present. Understanding the history of this great nation is paramount in understanding our greatness. So today we want to continue looking at the life and story of the most infamous traitor in American history, Benedict Arnold, and his background and his motivation for what he did, why he did, the decisions that he made, and the reasons that he made those decisions, and so we can understand what Benedict Arnold was thinking and why he did what he did during his life. And in our first program, we looked at Arnold's background. We looked at the success he was as a business person, the motivation Arnold had from being a young person from age 12 or 13 when his family, because of his father's drinking and gambling, lost all their money and became quite destitute, and how Arnold became a very successful businessman through his own apothecary store and bookstore. Then he went on to have owned three ships with a business partner where they could start making a lot of money trading up and down the East Coast and the West Indies and bringing a lot of West Indie goods, the Caribbean goods up here. And so we begin to see that Arnold then had a brief career in the Connecticut militia. And then when he was old enough, he joined the Connecticut militia, particularly at the outset of the American Revolution. Arnold joins the Sons of Liberty, and he never mentioned that he joined them to fight for or to stand for the cause of liberty, but because he was so financially distraught because of all the different British acts. And then we came up to where Arnold is very successful with Ethan Allen taking Fort Ticonderoga without a shot. They literally walked into the fort in the middle of the night. And then later on, Arnold, through the Massachusetts Committee of Safety, and then during the siege of Boston, the Second Continental Congress has this idea that they want to invade Canada, particularly Quebec, and make Canada the 14th colony. And they were actually asked if they wanted to join us, and Canada politely turned the Continental Congress down. So the Second Continental Congress then decided they want to invade Canada, and primarily because that's where the British are at that point, and they want to take Canada. Well, it's very similar to the French and Indian War. You not necessarily are taking land because it's wooded. You're taking forts. And if you take forts, you control the land. So the plan was that Arnold was going to lead the invasion of Canada. And coming up out of the Hudson, the Mohawk Valley, it was going to be a two-pronged attack. General Richard Montgomery came up through New York and the Mohawk Valley, the Hudson River Valley, because that's where he lived. He was going to attack Montreal. Arnold was going to take a longer route over into out in the ocean, back onto the land, and make a circular pincer move up. And they were to meet at Quebec, and then they were going to have the attack on Quebec. Well, Richard Montgomery was very successful taking Montreal. When Richard Montgomery got his troops up to Quebec, Arnold had already lost a lot of his men from nutrition or cold, or they had turned around and went home at this point because it's now winter. And so Richard Montgomery, Benedict Arnold lead the attack or the assault on Quebec, and it's December 31st of 1775. Obviously, very cold, very, very cold, very blustery. It's not a good idea at that point. Well, it's a major tragedy. One, Richard Montgomery is point blank shot with a grape shot and is killed. One in the chest and one of his head. Richard Montgomery is immediately killed during the onslaught of Quebec, and it just falls apart. Richard Montgomery, by the way, is the first officer in the American Revolution that had a statue forged in his honor, Richard Montgomery, which is in New York City. And throughout many of the eastern side of the United States, there are 14 states that have either counties or libraries or schools, monuments dedicated to Richard Montgomery. There's actually one down by the Art Museum in Philadelphia. The county that I live in outside Valley Forge is named after him, Montgomery County. Montgomery, Alabama is named after Richard Montgomery. And he's one of those generals that's pretty quickly overlooked. One, because it's early in the American Revolution at that point, and there's so much going on. But with the assault on Quebec that becomes a major disaster, Benedict Arnold is wounded in the left leg and has to turn over command to other officers. And we see a lot of his men become prisoners of war, Daniel Morgan being one of them. Fortunately, later on, he is exchanged in a prisoner exchange. Arnold is wounded in the left leg, has to withdraw. And at that point, Congress then promotes Benedict Arnold to become a brigadier general. And then after Arnold recovered from his left leg wound, Arnold then takes command of the rear guard, moving away from Canada, going back into upper state New York, into that area. And how important that was. If you were given rear command, it's a very important position. It's a sign of respect that you are given a rear guard command to protect the rest of the army as it's withdrawing. So we see that throughout American history, oftentimes a general of high esteem and a very good fighting general is given rear guard command. So it's an honor. It's not a punishment. And so we see Arnold being honored with given rear guard command, particularly after he's recovering from his wound. Congress promotes him to become a brigadier general at this point. Then after that, we find out that the British are going to come down through Lake Champlain, down the Hudson River under the command of General Guy Carleton, and they're going to split New York like they tried to do next year under Burgoyne. So Congress asked Arnold to build a fleet of ships. And that fleet is in quotes, a fleet of ships to stop the British Navy from coming down Lake Champlain, down the Hudson. So this is where if you're familiar with the Battle of Valcour Island or the Battle of Valcour Bay, this is October of 1776. Arnold has 14, maybe 15 ships, and there's a question mark after that, because most of Arnold, what he was able to assemble, were not ships compared to the British at this point. The British had a lot of large ships coming down the Lake Champlain. The British had 32 ships. Arnold's ships were, his little navy was small. Obviously, they're not going to win this. Arnold's, all the ships are destroyed at this point. But what Arnold does at Valcour Island, he literally stops General Guy Carleton from advancing any farther down the Hudson River, down Lake Champlain, down the Hudson River, and then to strangle New York City. So Guy Carleton has to turn his ships around and go back up into Canada. And that is extremely important, because if Arnold was not successful, next year under John Burgoyne would have never happened at that point. But because Arnold stops Guy Carleton with this little amount of ships that he has, the British have to turn around and go back to Canada and then try the same strategy next year with John Burgoyne's strategy of coming down and splitting New York in three places. But as Arnold is on the shore trying to get his men off these ships and get him, he's on a horse and the horse is wounded and the horse falls on top of Arnold's left leg, the one that was healing at that point. So Arnold is still recovering somewhat from that wound on his left leg. The horse is killed and it falls on his left leg, which does a tremendous amount of damage to his leg as it's trying to heal at that point. So now we see Arnold with a wounded leg as a widow. His sister is running his business. He does stop Guy Carleton, gets very little accommodations for that at that point. The horse falls on his left leg that is now recuperating somewhat. So Arnold knows that he needs to do something to be elevated in command. So what Arnold does at this point, he begins to establish a strong relationship with General Washington. And Washington had great admiration for Benedict Arnold and militarily what Arnold was doing. For the militia general that was well known in New York, Philip Schuyler, who is well known and well respected in New York, because Arnold knows that he needs to have friends in high places. And then also Horatio Gates, who was a British officer who has left the British Army and is now fighting as a Continental General. So at this point, as people begin to see what Arnold is doing to get on very good terms with some of the hierarchy, well-known people in the Continental Army and Congress, there are many people in the Army and officers that do not like Arnold one bit. They question his motives. They question his background. They question his leadership ability. There are a lot of things that they don't like about Benedict Arnold. They don't believe he's a trustworthy man. They believe that he has ulterior motives in what he is doing, and he's trying to climb this ladder at this point. So we have Congress that's very uneasy with Benedict Arnold. We have a lot of people in the military that's very uneasy with Benedict Arnold, does not like him. And yet Washington has great admiration at this point, as well as Philip Schuyler, because of what Arnold is doing militarily. Later on, not much longer, if you're familiar with the Battle of Ridgefield, Connecticut, which is in April of 1777, the British are moving inland. This is the only inland battle in Connecticut during the American Revolution. And the British win that battle. Arnold raises 700 men to try to get there to help with the battle. Arnold, with his 700 men, got there too late. But what Arnold does is, with his 700 men, Arnold stops the British advance from moving inland any farther in Connecticut and actually pushes the British all the way back to the coastline at this point. So Arnold, we now see his success of pushing the British all the way back to the coastline after the Battle of Ridgefield, Connecticut. And unfortunately, here, Arnold is again wounded in the left leg. So Arnold now has been wounded twice in the left leg. He's had a horse fall on him twice. And Arnold now is not getting the recognition, or now he's physically getting quite beat up at this point as a commanding general. Arnold wants a higher rank. Because of his military success, Arnold believes that he should be elevated in rank. He wants to be a major general, one, for recognition, two, because it's a higher pay if he can get it, and three, because he can make decisions that would possibly and probably bring him windfalls through things that generals were allowed to do with the American military. Congress does elevate Arnold to become a major general. Arnold was very angry because they didn't recognize him in seniority. So if Arnold is a major general and someone else is a major general, if they have seniority, Arnold is now under their command. So Arnold not only wanted to become a major general, he also wanted to be elevated in seniority. Why should these former British military, why should they have seniority over me? Why should Horatio Gates have seniority over me? Why should Charles Lee have seniority over me? I'm an American. Arnold's thinking, I'm an American. They're British. And yet they have seniority over me. So this really, really angers Arnold quite a bit, because he doesn't have seniority rank. And Congress really did have a ridiculous law at that point, where you can only have so many generals from each general geographical location. So if we have, I'll just use the number, 3 generals from Massachusetts, that's all we can have. They have to have generals from other areas, which is pretty ridiculous, because your generals should be your best people who are able to lead and command. But that was the law at the time in the thinking of command. So with Arnold not getting seniority, Arnold resigns. He resigns July 11th of 1777. Arnold resigns. He's had enough. He's been wounded. He's lost his wife. He now realizes that his family, Hannah, is bankrupting his business. So he's beginning to lose a lot of money. He's not elevated in command. Arnold resigns and said, that's it. I've had enough. There's no recognition here. Well, Washington refused his resignation. General Washington refused to accept his resignation. And General Washington ordered Benedict Arnold to the Northern Campaign, which is in New York, to assist Horatio Gates and Philip Schuyler during the British New York command under General Burgoyne. So Arnold is sent up to New York by General Washington. Arnold accepts that his resignation was not accepted, thinking that Arnold, now he's friends with Philip Schuyler and Horatio Gates and General Washington, he'll be able to have a higher command. Well, when Arnold was on his way up to connect with Horatio Gates, particularly outside of Saratoga at Freeman's Farm and there in Bemis Heights. Arnold runs across a gentleman named Han Yost, and he tells Han Yost to go over to Fort Stanwyck and tell Barry St. Ledger, who was coming across out of Fort Stanwyck, he's going to meet Burgoyne in Albany. You go up there to Barry St. Ledger, and you tell him Arnold's coming, and he's coming with a lot of men. So Han Yost had some sort of a mentally challenged situation going on with him. The Mohawk Indians thought that he had some special connections with the gods, so they really respected and liked Han Yost quite a bit. Han Yost goes to Barry St. Ledger, and Arnold, before that, he takes his coat, and he dirties it, and he puts a couple holes in it, and he muddies up Han Yost and tells Han Yost, go tell Barry St. Ledger that you were captured, but you got away, but Arnold is on his way. So Han Yost gets up to Barry St. Ledger at Fort Stanwyck, and immediately he's taken to Barry St. Ledger. Well, all the Mohawks come because they know Han Yost. Barry St. Ledger says to Han Yost, how many men does Benedict Arnold have? And Han Yost looks up into the forest and he says, as many leaves as there are on those trees. And at that point, the Mohawks wanted nothing to do with Benedict Arnold. They leave. They take off. They're not going to have anything more to do. Barry St. Ledger loses a lot of his command as they were Mohawks. So he's got to withdraw. So at that point, so Arnold then goes up and connects with Horatio Gates, Freeman's Farm and Bemis Heights. And actually, Arnold wanted to attack the British, particularly at that point. Horatio Gates was more laid back. Actually, his men nicknamed him Granny Gates because he was so slow and didn't want to move. He has a knockdown, drag-out fight with Benedict Arnold. Arnold is removed of command. He had the left flank command. Arnold is removed of command. He's relieved of command. So during the battle of Bemis Heights, Arnold is up on a hill watching this transpire, and he knows if his men on the right, on the left, if they just circle around and take the Bremen Redoubt, they could win this battle, and they're not moving. So Arnold is irate at that. He charges down the hill, takes back command of his men, leads the attack on the Bremen Redoubt, takes the Bremen Redoubt, really forces Burgoyne's men and the Hessians to withdraw back at this point. And Arnold's the one who really wins the Battle of Saratoga. But he's wounded again for the third time in the left leg above the knee at this point. And after this battle was over, when Horatio Gates wrote the report and sent it to the Continental Congress, Horatio Gates takes takes all the credit for the battles of Saratoga. Arnold is not mentioned at all. So Arnold now is wounded. They were going to amputate his leg. He refused to have his leg amputated. It takes about 18 months to heal. When the leg finally does heal, his left leg is now 3 inches shorter than his right leg. He has to have special boots made with a 3-inch heel on it. He has to walk with a cane for the rest of his life. He gets no credit for Saratoga at all. So Arnold goes back to Connecticut, recovers, is on the recovery. This time he resigns and doesn't care. He's resigned and had enough. He's been wounded. He's now a widow. He is bankrupt as his sister could not take care of his businesses very well. Washington asks Arnold to come visit him at Valley Forge, which he comes down and visits Washington at Valley Forge. Washington asks Arnold to come back to the army and continue to serve. And Arnold says, Your Excellency, because I love for you and respect you, I will come back to the military at this point. But Arnold can't lead in the field because of his lameness in his left leg. So after the British vacate Philadelphia, General Washington sends Benedict Arnold into Philadelphia to be the military governor of Philadelphia, because now the loyalists in Philadelphia are being hung on every lamppost because the British are no longer there to protect them, and it becomes a tremendous chaos in Philadelphia. Arnold is sent in to be the military governor to get everything back under control, and it's not long before Benedict Arnold sees Peggy Shippen. The Shippen family in Philadelphia is well known. They're very rich. During the British occupation, the Shippens spend a lot of time with the British high command as far as plays and dinners and orchestra concerts and things. Major Jean-André, who was an aide-de-camp to General Howe, took a liking to Peggy Shippen, spent a lot of time with her. Peggy Shippen is the youngest daughter at this point. And he actually did some drawings of Peggy Shippen. He wrote poetry. And when the British vacate Philadelphia, Major John Andre cuts a locket of his hair off and puts it in a locket and gives it to Peggy Shippen. And so there was some sort of a relationship between them at that point, admiration. And Peggy Shippen was one of those young ladies that just loved the attention that she was getting from the British High Command. Well, when Arnold gets into Philadelphia, he sees Peggy Shippen. He actually then falls in love with her. He courts her. He actually ends up marrying her. And there's 18 years between them. Arnold is maybe 19 years. Arnold is 38 and she's 19 when they finally marry at this point. And so Arnold now is going to begin to be influenced by Peggy Shippen about what to do at this point. About what to do, what about the revolution, can we continue on with this? And the Carlisle Commission, which a lot of people don't know about, Lord Carlisle was sent over by the King of England at that point, and basically the commission was, tell the Second Continental Congress that we'll give you your freedom. You're your own country. You can have the government you want. There's so many in the Carlisle Commission. And all we ask that you remain in the Commonwealth of Nations, like for many of these nations today at that point. So we were going to be under the Carlisle Commission and King George. He gave us the opportunity to be an independent nation. Second Continental Congress at that point, because it was run over by the radicals that, no, we still want this blood. They said, absolutely not. We're not going to do that. And so this is where Arnold, with the influence of his wife, his life, Peggy, begins to say, Arnold's thinking was, I can stop this. I can stop the revolution. This has gone on far enough, enough bloodshed. And if I say no, and if I say it's going on long enough, we need to stop this, there'll be hundreds of thousands of people that will follow me at this point. But Arnold needs to get in touch with the British, and that's where Peggy begins to communicate with her ex-friend, Major John Andre, in New York. And so now the go-between for the British and Arnold was Major John Andre. And so the British want Arnold to capture West Point or take West Point. Arnold gets command of West Point, and then Arnold is going to turn over West Point to the British, and so they can have all of New York and possibly end this. Well, during the communications, John Andre is caught with information that from Benedict Arnold when he was a commandant of West Point. John Andre is caught, and now people know that Benedict Arnold has turned. He's become a traitor at this point. Arnold even actually said, if you come during a certain day, Washington will be here. You can have Washington too at this point. So Andre is captured. It's now well known that he has plans with Benedict Arnold's signature on it. So what Andre is captured, Benedict Arnold, it gets word that Andre is captured. And so what Andre or it's Benedict Arnold, he leaves West Point. He leaves his wife there and he vacates down the Hudson River and gets to the British lines. When Washington gets to West Point, Peggy Shippen puts on a great act like she's probably had some sort of a mental emotional breakdown, gives Washington this long story about she didn't know what was going on and nothing. Washington buys that story, and then ultimately he sends Peggy Shippen to be with her husband, Benedict Arnold, in New York City. So we still have more to go on the story at this point, but because we're out of time, I need to stop there at this point. So to recap, Arnold is wounded 3 times. A horse has fallen in the left leg. A horse has fallen on his left leg. He now has to walk with a cane and walk with a severe limp. He's been bankrupt. He's lost a wife. He didn't get elevated in command. He doesn't get seniority. So at this point, with particularly after the Carlisle Commission, Arnold believes that he now could be the hero and stop the American Revolution, and hundreds of thousands of people will follow him. But none of that ever happens, which we know. So we will pick that up in our upcoming shows. This is 1180 AM WFYL, Working for Your Liberty.